Come to the 64th annual OA birthday party. Together, we get better. In person, January 12th through 14th at the LAX Hilton in Los Angeles, California. Meet fellows from across the globe for a weekend-long extravaganza of workshops, panels, special interest speakers, entertainment, fellowship, laughs, and recovery. Highlights include body image workshop, weekend-long big book study, sober eating workshop, keynote speakers with unique stories, dance party and comedy show, yoga and meditation, meetings and meetups for LGBTQIA, BIPOC, Spanish language, young people, and AAPI members, plus a boutique where you can shop till you drop. Registration is now open at oabirthday.com. Staying the night? Book your room now at a discounted rate through the oabirthday.com website and act fast because rooms sell out quickly. There is a solution. You'll hear from speakers who have various versions of this disease who live happy, joyous, and free. Because together, we get better.
Welcome to the OA Virtual Kitchen Sink Meeting Podcast. Visit the Los Angeles Intergroup at oalaig.org for information on how to join our meeting live and how to donate to support this meeting and our podcasts. The opinions expressed on the Kitchen Sink podcast are those of the individual speakers and do not represent OA as a whole. And now, our speaker.
I'm Melissa. I'm a compulsive overeater. God, am I a compulsive overeater. A food addict and I'm a 100-pounder. I'll get some numbers and things out of the way first. So I've been in the rooms for, I always have to look at the calendar, 32 years. I celebrated in March this year, 29 years of food sobriety. I've maintained 100-pound weight loss for the majority of that time. And I am I'm a walking, talking, breathing, living miracle. I really am a miracle. I'll get into that in a little bit. I've got some pictures and one day I'll scan these and share them and do it like all technologically. Let's see. There you go. That's not the best lighting, but you kind of get a sense that, I know what it is. I know what the burden of an extra 100 pounds feels like emotionally, physically, and spiritually. I know what that is. I'm going to talk really briefly about what it was like, because quite frankly, I'd rather share some of what I've learned along the way in the hopes that it helps someone, right? So I have a really ugly childhood history that has a lot of trauma and physical abuse and things like that. And my mom baked. And by the way, I will say that I don't blame my parents for this thing. I don't blame anybody. There's nobody to blame for this thing. I believe that I kind of came out of the chute with it. And so I ate. My mom baked and I ate. And she was very good at it. And my first memory of food is 4 years old. My mom had baked something and I pulled a chair up to the counter and I gouged out the top of this thing. And I really do remember my little four-year-old mind thinking, this is brilliant. She'll never know I did this. I'm an artist. And so, of course, she did know. And she asked me, Melissa, do you know what happened to the blah, blah, blah? But of course it's me. I mean, it only could be a four-year-old. It could only be me. And I said to her, maybe the mousies ate it. Because I knew at a young age, at 4 years old, I knew I had to lie. I had to lie. That's my first. And she thinks the story is adorable. And it is on the surface. But if you go a little deeper, it's actually a foreshadowing of things to come. And so that's where I started. I am, to anybody who struggles, hates that they have this thing, I would offer a different perspective. I am grateful. I'm grateful to God that he gave me this because it saved me at a time when there was nothing and no one. And quite frankly, when it worked so well that I didn't need drugs or alcohol. Who needs that when I have stuff in a pink box or stuff that comes in a dozen or whatever. I mean, it worked so well. I'm not going to lie. It talks about it in the doctor's opinion, the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once from taking the first compulsive bite. Yes, just yes. I get it. I get why I do it. I get why we do it. I get it. And so I was off to the races, and it is a progressive illness. And before I came to these rooms, I found my recovery in LA, not LA Inner Group. And I remember, and I talk about it all the time, and I hope I never forget this image, being in my studio apartment in Westwood, across from the federal buildings, binging my brains out with the drapes drawn. And then in those days we had phones, actual phones, not cell phones, but I mean real phones. And I would literally unplug it from the wall. How's that for an old school reference? And I would sit there and binge my brains out, just have the food in front of me and just go, because I had to. So to anybody who's like, why do I do this? Why do I keep doing this? Why do I do this? Here's my answer. Because I'm a compulsive overeater, and it's what I do. That's what I do. It's what I do. And so, and it was dark, you guys. It was so dark. It was so dark. And I remember to me, there were two layers. There were two highs that I would get from it. There was the high before the high, and that was gathering all the stuff and getting it ready and going to the market. In those days, we didn't have delivery. So if you wanted your stuff, you had to go get it. And knowing that the binge was coming, that was the high before the high. Then there was the high of the binge. It was an absolute living hell. I couldn't stop thinking about food, obsessing about food. Every thought, every waking moment, every thought was in some way about food. And I couldn't stop eating. I remember going to bed some nights and going to sleep, turning out the lights, and it wanted to be fed. So it woke me up and it wanted to go through this drive-through or wherever it wanted to go. I remember the times where I thought, I don't want to do this. It doesn't care, frankly, that I don't want to do this, because we're doing this. And so I would do this. And by this, I mean, just binge my brains out. Eat in inhumane amounts of food. And it wasn't just the volume of food, you guys. It was the way that I ate it. The way that I ate it, with just a ferociousness and a focus of, I think of a shark on a feeding frenzy. Everything in the world faded to the background. Friends, responsibilities, everything faded to the background. It was me and the food. It was just this laser focus. And before you guys found me, I was agoraphobic. I couldn't leave the house except to get my binge foods. I was able to pull it together for that. I dropped out of school. I couldn't hold a job. I was a mess. And then I went to my first meeting. I don't even like to say I went there. I'd like to say I was delivered to my first meeting in Santa Monica. It was in the basement of a church. And I heard somebody talk about, at a podium with a microphone and about 30 or 40 people, talk about eating out of the trash. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing, because I did that. I remember eating out of the trash and flicking the ants off. I probably ate ants. But when I'm in the middle of a binge, I frankly don't care. And that was the moment that my life began to change, although I didn't realize it, because here was somebody who talked about eating out of the trash, and she talked about it so easy, and people nodded, and I couldn't believe it, because that was the moment that I knew I wasn't alone. Up until that point, I thought, nobody else does this. And how do you even bring that up to somebody? Do you eat out of the trash? Do you eat incredible volumes of food? I mean, how do you say that? You don't. So anyway, I want to talk about what I've learned in the rooms, over the years, and take what you like and leave the rest, right? Take what you like and leave the rest. So I hear about the three-legged stool, emotional, physical, and spiritual recovery. And that implies to me that each of those is equally weighted. And so my experience is it has to be more of a pyramid. That the base of the pyramid needs to be the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And to anybody who's struggling because they don't believe, they don't trust, they don't feel connected, I would say, don't worry about it. The only thing I need to do to maintain my fit spiritual condition is to reach for my loving higher power on a daily basis. Seek my loving higher power. That's it. And some days I feel connected and some days I don't, and it doesn't really matter. All that matters is the seeking. Because the belief and the faith and the trust to me is a byproduct of the seeking, and I can't control that. But I can take action every day to seek. The middle of the pyramid for me is the emotional stuff. So it's all the writing and the journaling and the fourth steps and the tenth steps. And I also have outside help. I have a trauma therapist who has been just an incredible gift to my recovery, because I recognize that some of this stuff I need for myself. I need outside help to deal with some of the trauma. And the top of it is the physical recovery. And it means that I have a food plan, and I refer to it, lovingly refer to it over all these years as my zoo food plan. I eat the same sort of thing at the same time every day. I'm not good with variety. When I binged, I didn't even binge on different things. I had my set things, and that works for me. I realize it doesn't work for everybody. I committed in the morning. I email my commitment in the morning. I bookended it at night and let my sponsor know if there's any changes. She has been listening to my food for 29 years. I've had the same sponsor for 29 years, and I am blessed beyond measure to be working with this woman. So that is how I see it. I've got to focus on the spiritual, because for me, everything else sits on that. I believe, and I've come to believe, I should say, that there is an absolute formula for recovery, and it works 24/7, 365. And this is what I believe to be the formula for recovery. It is always my footwork, regardless of how I feel about it, and I'll get to that in a second, plus God's incredible grace and his mercy equal recovery and healings. Thank you, life. So my footwork, regardless of how I feel about it. So here's where I will say, please take what you like and please leave the rest. I love when I have willingness. Willingness is great. I love when I have it. It makes actions easier, but I've come to learn it is absolutely not necessary. The only thing that's necessary is action. And I recognize so often that the willingness comes after I take the action. When I'm done with this, when I'm done with our meeting, I'm going to put on my shoes and go outside and take a walk. I am completely unwilling to do that. And that's very nice. I find it to be very portable, my unwillingness. I just put on my shoes and I have sober feet, and they walk out the door and I just go with them. I have to take action on a daily basis. And if this was the big book, this would be italicized, even and especially when I don't want to. And sometimes, you guys, I'm slow to that action. Sometimes I'm on the internet, and don't you know that there's something I need to read, and then there's something else, and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And an hour or two goes by, and hey, wait a second, I've still got my evening routine to do. And sometimes I procrastinate it so long that I have only a limited time to do that evening routine. So I am eventually disciplined. That's what I'll call myself, eventually disciplined. But I know that I've got to do things on a daily basis, because I believe that I have a partnership with my loving higher power, that he, she, it expects me to do something, to meet them in the middle. I can't just sit around and say, God, I really hope I'm sober today. And by the way, I like the word sober, besides not abstinent, but call it a banana. It doesn't really matter what we call it. But I've gotta invest in my sobriety, right? I have to invest in my sobriety. And so I've got to take action on a daily basis. And guess what? The results aren't mine. Sometimes things go the way I would love them to, and sometimes they don't. And either way, God is there, right? Like, either way, it's easier for me to see God when things are going well and going right. And I also need to see God when things aren't going my way and they aren't going well. And so I have a little analogy that I often share about this, because it helps me distinguish where my action starts and ends and where God's grace starts and ends. And so, and I always give this little sort of statement that I'm not a sports person, but I know enough to share this. I think of a pitcher on the day of the baseball game. Everything up to the point where the ball leaves his hand is his business. All the practice, going to the game, warming up. I don't know what those folks do, but I'm sure there's a lot involved. Once the ball leaves his hand, it's no longer his business. It's God's business. And maybe it goes the way he wants, and maybe it doesn't. Maybe a gust of wind comes by, and I mean, who knows? But I am required to throw the pitch every single day. every single day. Every day, I've got to throw the pitch. And so that is the analogy that helps make it clear for me where my action starts, stops, and where God's grace kicks in. And then, and forgive me, you guys, I'm going to be sort of all over the place, but I am food neutral most of the time, 85% of the time. But I'll tell you what I always am, because my loving God is with me. More important than my food neutrality is food protection. I need food protection 24/7, 365, even and especially on those days when I'm not feeling food neutral. Because if I'm food neutral 85% of the time, what's happening to the other 15%? I need God's protection in that time. I hear, and forgive me, I really am jumping around. I hear so often we talk about relapse. We talk about relapse all the time, preventing relapse, relapse, relapse. I would offer that I've got to be aware of pre-lapse. Where are the edges of my program fraying? Where am I not going to a meeting that I normally go to? Where am I not calling my sponsor? Where am I not giving service? Where are those little seemingly small areas where my program begins to fray? It is in the fraying. It is in the prelapse that I find myself in relapse. So I've got to watch for the prelapse. And I believe, well, it's my experience that I prelapse all the time. And I've got to really watch where that's happening and take corrective actions. 5 minutes. Thank you.
Yes.
And I will share my thoughts on step one. No disrespect meant to our founders. This is how I perceive step one. Take what you like and please, please leave the rest. We admitted we were powerless over food and our lives had become unmanageable. I gotta tell you guys, unmanageable isn't powerful enough for me because I'll just eat through that and try and control that more. So I changed the word. We admitted we were powerless over food and our lives had become unbearable. Unbearable is what got me here. It's what keeps me here. It's why I do these things on a daily basis, because I know who I am and what I do if I don't. This is a life-threatening disease for me. This isn't just a little problem with food. It isn't just a couple hundred pounds. I'll lose everything. I will lose everything because I am an addict. And I believe an addict is an addict is an addict. We all just use different things, but I use food. And if I pick up my alcoholic food today, maybe not today or tomorrow or next week, but eventually it will be my higher power and it will be my master. And when it jumps, I will say how high. I will lose everything because the only thing that will matter to me is getting my drug of choice. So that means I will lie, cheat, sneak, steal. I'm a horrible person in the throes of my eating disorder. I do things that now in sanity sound insane. Just as I was getting in program many years ago, I lost a job because I had the petty cash in my drawer. And I remember thinking and being okay with the idea, the petty cash is in my drawer, so it must be my money. Of course, it's my money. It's my drawer at my employer's office. It's my drawer. And I'll tell you what, I'll do that again. I'll do it again. Because when I'm in it, you guys, the only thing that matters to me is getting it. I don't care. I don't care how I humiliate myself. I don't care how I embarrass myself. I don't care what I say to you or do to you. Because I'm an addict and I need it. I need it. And once I wake that dragon, I believe that I won't be able to calm that dragon down again, ever again. I have to do everything and anything to hang on to this sobriety. And by the way, you guys, most imperfect. I had a difficult Thanksgiving. I ate more than I planned, vegetables. And it wasn't just the way that I ate it. I felt the compulsion stirring. And I ate it with that, you know, the way we do when we're binging, with that focus, that shark focus. And it wasn't, you know, in this case, it wasn't so much the food, it was the behavior. Behavior I was ill at ease with the behavior. So I share that with you guys because I am not perfect. I am absolutely not perfect. I have had bigger meals in here. I have also had a period of anorexia in these rooms that lasted about 9 months. Terrifying illness. It seems as though my compulsive overeating will wait to take me out. It's kind of more patient and lazy, but anorexia, ooh, it's a different animal. It wants me gone now, right now. So I am a grateful girl, you guys. I shouldn't be here. I was suicidally desperate when I was brought to these rooms, delivered here. The program is life-changing, life-saving. My life today doesn't look at all like it looked when you guys found me. Not at all. I have a job that I love. I have a career that I really enjoy. I have dear friends. I have a guy that's been in my life for almost 25 years. I have all of you. And I also have hard days. I struggle with depression and anxiety. You know, that's part of my story. You know, I like all of us, right? I have good days and I have bad days. I used to talk to a sponsee about some days I crawl and some days I soar. And all of that put together is what recovery looks like. So if you're struggling, please, please stay. Please find one of us and tell us. We've either thought it, done it, said it, or imagined it. I don't believe there's anything new under the food sun. Nothing is shocking anymore. Nothing is shocking. I'm a grateful girl, you guys. I am just a grateful, grateful member of this program and grateful to see all of you because I know that when I come into a meeting and I say I'm food focused, everybody gets it. I know that. Outside of these rooms, not so much. This is my safe space. Thank you, Frank, for asking me. And I just wish you all blessings and goodness. Thank you, guys. Let's see. This is a time for questions only. There's no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leader are my own and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. If you've asked a question last week, please wait until the first three questions have been asked before raising your hand. So who would like to ask a question? Cheryl.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you so much. I've heard you share before, but I heard more and different stuff this time. Thank you. So when you find that your symptoms of depression and or anxiety spike, does that make it more difficult to carry through with your commitment to your program? And then if it does, what do you do?
It's a good question. Sometimes yes. And so I do it anyway. And sometimes it means that I'm kind of dragging myself through it. But I just need to do it. And so I recognize that in those times, I need to take an action. And sometimes, frankly, it's really flat. Sometimes when I'm praying and I'm in that space, it's like, God, blah, 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 blah. And I'm not, but you know what? I'm taking an action. The other thing that I do is, and this is my experience, but I found that I need to move my body. And so I've regularly exercised for many, many years. I have to move. And I also remember sometimes, hey, why don't I call somebody else? Because I find that the depression and anxiety is a real self-focused thing that I need to get out of myself and go make a call to a newcomer or to somebody who's struggling and let them know this call is for you. This call is for you. I want to hear how you are doing and get out of myself. I hope that that helps a little bit. Thank you. Amy.
Hi, Melissa. Great to hear you lead today. I always get so much out of your leads. I was wondering if you could speak to your experience sponsoring and any tips that you have.
Oh, yeah. You know, I find sponsoring, first of all, I will tell you that it's taken me a really long time to feel, I'm going to say, even comfortable with it. I have had many, many, many sponsees, and typically, a lot of them have just left. Some of them have become such dear friends that I can't sponsor them anymore. And so I sponsor the way that I've been sponsored. Which means that I use the OA 12 and 12. I use the big book. I use whatever is at our disposal. And I pass on what I've learned. It has taken me a while to kind of find my groove in that area. I am frankly, I believe, much better at returning a call to somebody who's struggling. But I have a sponsee now. We've been working together for well over a year. And, you know, I just pass on what I have learned and recognize that I'm certainly not this person's higher power. And I've been taught that the role of the sponsor is to help somebody find a higher power that works for them. That's kind of my role. It's what my sponsor's done with me for 29 years. And I also find that for me, it's a special relationship. Not all sponsor-sponsee relationships gel well. And that's fine. It's nothing about either person. It's just that there's a special connection, I find, that needs to be there in order for it to, I'll say in air quotes, work well. So, yeah, the other thing I find about sponsoring, which maybe we don't talk about a lot, is it really tests my ability to set boundaries for myself and for the person that I'm sponsoring. And that has been maybe the biggest struggle for me in sponsoring is the ability to set those boundaries. But I'm more comfortable in setting boundaries and I'm more comfortable in the role of sponsor these days. And I love working with my sponsee. And I will make a plug for any service, you guys, sponsoring, showing up at a meeting, reading the 12 steps or 12 traditions, getting a service position. It's all really important stuff. So I hope that helped. Excellent. Carol, looks like you're next up.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you so much for your share. I'm thinking a lot about humility these days. The struggle to achieve it, my lack of it, what it really is. And I'm just wondering if you could share a little bit with all your experience on what you've learned about humility over the years.
Yeah. Thanks. That's a great question. Here's what I know about humility and being humble. That all of my gifts, all of my successes, all of my joy, all the hard stuff too, but I see it more in the good stuff, is God's gift to me. I am by the grace of this program and a lot of hard work. I'm a CPA today. And I got to tell you, the experience of becoming a CPA was incredibly, incredibly humbling. And that I have the ability to do this kind of work, I recognize that it's nothing I've done. It has been given to me. The ability to love this work and to do this work well has been given to me. It's all given. All of it is given. And I am gratefully humbled by the gifts that my loving higher power has bestowed on me and the goodness he, she, it has bestowed on me. I've done footwork and the results are never mine. Right? They're never mine. I am humbled by my sobriety, my food sobriety. I'm humbled by the life I have today. I'm humbled by my professional success. You guys, if you had caught my act 32 years ago, it didn't look like this. There was nothing in my life leading up to program that would speak to the gifts I would later be given. Nothing. So I get real right-sized about that. I get real right-sized about it. And I've learned that over time. As long as I stay grateful and humble, that means I'm teachable. Those are really good places for me to be. I'm amazed at who I am today. I'm just amazed by it, frankly. And that keeps me really humble. I hope that helped answer your question, Carol. Who's next? Deb's next. Hi, Deb.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you so much. Can you talk about your deep spiritual connection and how its creation has occurred, I suppose, is kind of what I'm trying to say. Like, I would love to hear where this started. And
oh, thank you. Thank you, my friend. So my spiritual faith connection, whatever you want to call it, is of the educational variety. I was not one of those who was struck food sober and that's that. It has come from a lot of looking back and seeing all the gifts, all the grace that God has blessed me with. Here's what I know. I cannot stop eating on my own. I simply cannot. I went on countless diets, did countless crazy things before program to try and prove to myself, as the big book talks about, that I could eat like a normal person. I could control and enjoy my eating. And as it says, if I control it, I can't enjoy it. If I enjoy it, I can't control it. There is nothing logical that could explain to me how I have been sober for 29 years. Nothing. Absolutely nothing that I can point to logically that can explain to me how I've done that. Because I have to think I haven't done that alone. I can't explain it. And so I call my higher power God because it's a really good shorthand for me. I mean, as I always say, call it a banana. It doesn't really matter. There is something. There is a force of good. And I think of God as a force of good out there somewhere that helps me do this. Now, I recognize I'm in a partnership with my God. I can't just pray to God and have, you know, things magically happen. But I can't do this. I also know that I can't find God with my mind. I can't think my way to God. It's really good for what I do for a living, but it is not good for spirituality. I have to find God here. And I find God or nature, or I don't even care what you call it. It could be the tree in your front yard. Because I look around and I see that the sun is up right now. I didn't do that. I see the beautiful trees I'm looking at. And I think our best efforts at a tree are those cell phone towers that you see with the little face. I mean, that is us making a tree. I didn't do this. There's something bigger than me. And it has to be not just bigger than me, but bigger than my eating disorder. Bigger than me isn't big enough, you guys. It's got to be bigger than me and bigger than my eating disorder that will allow me to go through the day without compulsive overeating. I can't explain it. I have no explanation for it, except to say it's not me. And I have a sense that there is a force of good out there. And, you know, what does it hurt for me to pray? Even if I didn't believe, even if I had no faith, what does it hurt for me to say, God help me, or heaven help me, or Mother Nature to help me? There you go. So I hope that answered the question. It's ever evolving. But I have to believe, and I have a sense in moments that there is a force of good. Let me tap into it. Let me reach for it. I don't have to connect or feel faithful. Let me just reach for it, move toward it. And maybe today I can be sober with my food. I hope that that helps. Vincent, hi, my friend.
Hello, Melissa. Thank you so much for your wonderful share. I have a question. You talk about, the way I understood it, it's almost like the edges of your abstinence. Yes. Or the edges of your program. How do you distinguish that from your abstinence? How does one relate to the other? And how do you know when one kicks in, when to actually watch out? Can you give us some tips on that?
Okay. So when I think about that, when I talk about the fraying of the edges of my program, what that really looks like to me are the actions that I'm taking on a daily basis that help to keep me food sober. I have to do some things on a daily basis to keep me sober. And those things have to be done on a daily basis. And so it means I need to be diligent about emailing my food every morning, committing it in the evening. It means I need to be diligent about my morning routine, my evening routine, and how I connect to my loving God throughout the day. Not perfect, diligent. So that means that there are times when I'm up late and I have to get to work, that I do my routine and I do it really quickly. blah, 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 check the box. And then there are times where it's very deep and meaningful. But I have to do it. I have to do it. And so I have to be aware of the times. You know, I'll tell you guys, I am like a trained SEAL. If I know that food is coming, I will walk on my eyebrows. So I know that I need to have my morning routine done before breakfast. I'll tell you what, nothing moves me more than that. If I know food is coming, nothing moves me more than that. It means I have to have my evening routine done before dinner. And you guys, I got to also tell you, this is a bit of an aside. I love my food. Every boring, sober meal is an absolute celebration. I wish I was one of those who said, food is just fuel for my body. Ah! Every meal is a celebration. And I've come to understand that, of course it is, because I'm a compulsive overeater, and of course it is. But anyway, so the edges of my program really have to do with my action. Those actions enable me to connect or have a path to my loving higher power. If I don't do those things, I can't clear a path. And if I don't have a path, it means that I can't abstain from my binge foods today. It means that I have to eat them. So all of this stuff is to clear a path for God to come in and help me. Does that help? Okay. Thank you, Vincent.
Lisa, for your wonderful share. I'm just struggling with trying to stop eating some of my red light foods, my trigger foods. What is your advice on that?
Well, I'll tell you what I've learned. What I've learned is that I won't put them down until I'm ready to put them down. And I won't do, unless I'm desperate. This is my experience. Unless I'm desperate, I won't put them down. And I will also say this. Even if you're still struggling with them, my number's in the chat. Let's talk after. Sharing about it, going to meetings is to me kind of the path to get done, to get ready to put them down. And I'd like to talk to you after the meeting. So why don't you, if you can just chat me your phone number, and my phone number's in the chat, I'm happy to talk to you. We still have a little over a minute. Ellie!
Lisa, thank you so much. I don't know if you have enough time, but you've talked about your morning routine and your evening routine. What compromises? I mean, what is made up?
What is it? I'll rattle it off real quick. Morning looks like prayer, journaling, reading. I don't usually meditate in the morning because oftentimes, you guys, I fall asleep. I connect with God throughout the day in prayer. And sometimes it's as simple as God, thank you. God, help me. God bless Jane. God, you know. And in the evening, it's prayer. It is giving thanks. And I meditate in the evening. And sometimes that meditation is 1 minute. And sometimes it's 10 or 15 minutes. And sometimes I don't meditate. There's how it phrased a little bit. But I have to connect with God throughout the day. And I also find that for me, exercise is also really important. So like I said, when I'm done here, I'm going to go take a walk outside in the beautiful day and connect.